afternoon, committee members and members of the public. Welcome to the Thursday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day edition of the Senate Rules Committee. So today we have two bills that we'll take up shortly under public hearing. And before we do that, I'm going to start by getting an update on the topic of initiatives from the Secretary of State's office. So I believe that would be Barry Pack, who'd like to come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State, and with me is Alana Guinea, one of our elections division staff. I said that right, right? Yeah, good. Who spends a lot of her time working on initiative enforcement issues. I'm going to provide sort of a high-level overview of some of the reforms that have happened over the last 4 years. Most of you have been here for those discussions, so I don't need to belabor the point, but just give a quick refresher. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about some legislation that the Secretary has introduced this session that's in the House that takes a slightly different tactic. As you'll recall, in the 2007 session, the legislature enacted House Bill 2082, which made a number of changes to the initiative process, specifically in the signature gathering process to prevent fraud and abuse in the system. Among the things the bill required was that signature gatherers would register with our office and complete a training program to familiarize themselves with the applicable laws, rules, and processes. It required our office to create uniform templates for cover and signature sheets so that anyone out there gathering signatures had the appropriate form. It was approved by our office and could prevent mistakes or other opportunities for fraud. It required signature gatherers to witness the signing of each sheet by the elector who was signing it and to certify at the bottom of the sheet that they had done so. The bill also prohibited the counting of any signatures on that sheet if the signature gatherer did not certify that they had witnessed those signatures. It required that if a chief petitioner pays signature gatherers, the chief petitioner needed to keep detailed payroll and other accounts and to make those available for inspection by the Secretary of State, the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, or the Attorney General to review for potential violations of the constitutional ban on paying per signature. And finally, that bill required that initiative committees file their contributions and expenditures online in our ORSTAR system as candidates do. In 2009, the Secretary of State introduced House Bill 2005, which built on the work that had begun 2 years early. And among the changes in that bill, it allowed us to conduct comprehensive background checks on signature gatherers as they register with us, and gave us the tools to prohibit someone from registering as a signature gatherer if they had been convicted of fraud, forgery, or identity theft within the last 5 years. It required chief petitioners to turn in original signature sheets once a month, and that provided more time for our staff to process those sheets, and it also provided a good checkpoint for chief petitioners to address any problems that may have occurred in their processes. It allowed us to impose a civil penalty for initiative violations at the same time a criminal investigation was underway. In many cases, criminal violations are harder to prove, and so we were given the option of either imposing a civil or a criminal penalty for any violation that was found. It authorized the Secretary of State to pull petition sheets that were collected by a circulator who has violated the law or found liable for certain civil or criminal actions, again, fraud, forgery, or identity theft. And then it made chief petitioners liable when they knew or should have known that a circulator working for them broke the law. That was a controversial part of this bill, and during that process, we did work very closely with Ross Day, at that time with Common Sense for Oregon, and Senator George to draft provisions in another bill that specified that a chief petitioner may not be held criminally liable solely based on a violation committed by a person obtaining signatures on the chief petitioner's behalf. That was a little bit of a compromise, assuaged some concerns, although admittedly not all. And finally, the bill barred paid circulators from collecting signatures as volunteers at the same time as they were being paid to collect signatures on another petition. That, too, had some controversy, and we are still in litigation over that provision. And we'll keep you posted on that as the courts move. That's sort of the quick four-year refresher on some of the reforms that have taken place. Coming into this session, the Secretary decided to take a slightly different approach, recognizing that we'd made some significant changes to the rules and the laws around initiatives, and all of those were continuing to happen mid-cycle for signature gatherers and chief petitioners, and felt that it was time that we sat a cycle out and let those reforms work and continue to see the impact they had on the system and any instances of fraud that may or may not continue to happen. And instead, what she chose to focus on were the enforcement mechanisms that were in place. Looking from our experience over the last 4 years, investigating and enforcing alleged violations of initiative law, what were some of the roadblocks? We asked our staff, what were some of the roadblocks to you in investigating and bringing to prosecution any violations? What would make your jobs easier? And so to that end, she introduced House Bill 2258. It's in the House Rules Committee under consideration, and I'll hit a few highlights of it, but that's the bill that I've asked Alana to come and give a little bit of a perspective on the background about why some of these provisions are in the bill. And I won't go into too much detail. As I said, it's in the House Rules Committee, and if and when it gets to you, I'm not sure what form or shape it will be in, but we'll be able to have further discussions at that point. A couple of the key provisions in the bill is amending the accounts section of the statute, again, the accounts that chief petitioners provide to us so we can review for possible violations of the ban on paying per signature, amending those to include that they maintain payroll information, including actual hours worked each week or each pay period by employees, along with the number of signatures collected by the employee. It would require chief petitioners, contractors, or subcontractors to submit all of this account information at least once every 6 months. We currently require them to do it more frequently, but there are some committees who cease circulating and would no longer be turning in their monthly signatures and accounts, and this would give us at least two opportunities a year to see what had been happening, even if they had abandoned their campaign. It allows the Secretary of State to provide a provisional registration to a paid signature gatherer where background checks indicate that additional research may need to be completed but can't be completed within the statutorily required time frame, which is 5 business days right now. One of the things that we experienced in the last cycle were initiative campaigns that got a somewhat late start and very quickly hired literally hundreds of signature gatherers in a week. And we had 5 days to try and process and do background checks on all of the signature gatherers. Not very workable and certainly not very thorough check for any criminal background. What this provision would do is allow us to issue a provisional registration. If we think there may be some more research that needs to be done, we have a delay in getting some information, they can still go out and gather signatures. If the background check comes out clear, their registration continues to be effective and they keep going. If we find a violation of the statute, then any signatures they collect under the provisional license would not be counted. There are some amendments that need to be made to the bill that were inadvertently taken out in the drafting, but I won't go into those. We'll fix those and get them over to you. The final piece, which relates somewhat to the bills you'll be hearing later this afternoon, is the bill establishes a toll-free confidential hotline for reporting suspected instances of fraud, forgery, or other election law violations in the initiative system. What we were really trying to go for here is to provide some whistleblower protection for the people who are most likely to know if there is something wrong going on in a particular campaign. The threat of retaliation is one that gets addressed for employees in other parts of the statute, but doesn't necessarily apply to subcontractors or contractors or even volunteers working on a campaign who may see something problematic and want to report it, but not want, but don't for fear of retaliation. So that's a piece that we're continuing to work on in the House. It's a work in progress. This committee has some bills that address something similar to that and could be another approach that we would look at in the House.
Oh, yes, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Barry, the provisional, I guess it's not license, but whatever it is, authorization, seems problematic to me. Problematic in terms of, while I don't have a problem with saying you got it provisionally, you can take it away, but the idea that someone's out there collecting signatures and the people who may legitimately want to support a petition sign it, and then unknowingly their signature is tossed, it doesn't seem fair or appropriate.
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, it's a good point. It's one we discussed a lot in the interim in drafting this legislation. It's finding that proverbial sweet spot when you have a campaign who wants to get going quickly, and literally I think it was we had 300 registrations coming in within a week or 10 days. We just don't simply have the ability to get all of those background checks done. So one option is to just deny the registration and delay them for a week in collecting signatures. One is to give them a provisional registration and let them go collect those signatures. And even if they have been convicted of fraud, forgery, or identity theft, those signatures would count. Or the route we took was to say no. It's a policy challenge, frankly.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wouldn't it maybe a better compromise is if you allow them to go provisionally just to have those petitions, once you, whatever, deny their ability to collect that, take those and do a higher level of check on those to make sure that the signatures that were collected were truly accurate representations of the voter?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, I think that would become rather complicated given the statistical sampling method that's used to ultimately verify signatures. It might be something that we could do on a process basis prior to any of those signatures being accepted for the sample.
I'm assuming you would throw that in quicker, and there's no reason why you couldn't have a more rigorous standard for those types of signatures collected.
So thank you for that comment. And we're not hearing that bill, obviously,
yeah,
today, but I do have, and I know we have another witness to testify. And I was just curious, are people being required in that scenario to go through the same training that everybody else has to complete to become a signature gatherer? And then are you intending to issue them IDs the way signature gatherer would? So they would be, in other words, out there as if they had never been convicted of fraud or forgery, and to all the world as if they had gone through what we expect and require for signature gatherers right now.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay.
All right, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alana Guinea. As Mr. Pack said, I work in the Elections Division. I process and analyze the accounts data, the payroll data from chief petitioners. I was just going to touch on a couple of the highlights of House Bill 2258 and kind of how we came to that conclusion in terms of why those would be helpful for us. For the hotline, we found that paid circulators are nervous about coming forward about issues they come across. They're in the best position to know what's happening in the field. They know how they're getting paid. But the signature gathering community in Oregon is really small, and so not only can they fear reprisal from their current employer, but they may fear, I'm not going to be able to gather signatures for anyone in this state ever again. And that's something we want to address and allow them to, you know, tell us what's going on out there in the field, and then we can use that information to prompt an investigation. And anything we can do to get more information from those signature gatherers is going to be really helpful to our office. The bill also adds contractor and subcontractor to a number of provisions of the statute, and that's important because it addresses the reality that most chief petitioners hire contractors and many of those hire subcontractors, and we want to get the accounts information from whoever has it. We don't want anyone to be able to hide behind anyone else in that business chain of command. So that would be really helpful for us in getting the best accounts data as quickly as possible. And as Mr. Pack mentioned, it's also going to require hours worked in a week, which is something that we only have every 2 weeks, the hours worked. And with our partnership with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, they said it would make life a lot easier for them to determine overtime violations if we could have those hours in a week. And so that would address that issue.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Guinea?
Guinea.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And I will close our informational meeting. And I'll open, we have witness sheets,
yep.
I assume.
They are coming up right now.
I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 159. And we'll wait just a moment. Okay. And Erin, would you like to tell us about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 159 makes payment for signature gathering for initiative or referendum petition based on the number of signatures obtained for violation of wage and hour statutes, permits Commissioner of Bureau of Labor and Industry to assess a civil penalty for unlawful deduction of employees' wages. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact has been issued yet on the measure.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And looks like we have two people signed up to testify, and I'll call them one at a time. First, we have Christy Hammond, if you'd like to come forward. And welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Christine Hammond, and I am the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division of the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. One of the things that the Wage and Hour Division does is enforce wage and hour laws in the state, including minimum wage and overtime provisions and working conditions such as rest and meal period requirements, child labor laws, really a variety of laws regulating the employment of workers in the state. As Mr. Pack indicated, the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, the Attorney General's Office, and the Secretary of State all have the authority pursuant to ORS 260262 to inspect the accounts of chief initiative referendum petitioners. And those accounts include information such as contracts entered into for obtaining signatures on these petitions, the employment manuals and training materials used by chief petitioners to train their employees, and payroll records for employees paid to obtain signatures showing the hours worked, numbers of signatures gathered, and amounts paid to those employees. As Mr. Pack indicated, Boley staff does work with the Secretary of State office staff in reviewing the records that are provided, while the Secretary of State's office focuses on election division requirements pertaining to signature gathering, Wage and Hour Division staff reviews the employer's payroll records and time records and employment manuals to make sure that the employers are in compliance with wage and hour law provisions. The Bureau's initiated about six actions in the last several years, enforcement actions against paid circulators, collecting unpaid wages, and enforcing the other laws that pertain to these employees, such as rest and meal period requirements, as I indicated previously, and record-keeping requirements. The payment of signature gatherers by the signature is currently prohibited by elections law only. It's not a violation of wage and hour law. So to allow the Bureau to pursue these kinds of violations along with the other wage and hour law violations we enforce, we think it makes sense to make pay by signature also a violation of wage and hour law so that enforcement actions aren't bifurcated between the Bureau and the Secretary of State's office. If the Wage and Hour Division is going to be enforcing wage-related issues, it also makes sense to have us have the authority to regulate the pay by signature provisions. A second element of Senate Bill 159 that's not really related directly to signature gatherers is the proposal that unlawful deductions have a civil penalty authority given to the Bureau of Labor and Industries. ORS 652610 permits employers to make deductions from the wages of employees under only certain circumstances, like if they are required by law, like taxes, if the deduction is authorized by the employee and is for the employee's benefit. Only specifically identified deductions can currently be made from employee paychecks. In 2007, the legislature enacted House Bill 2674 that amended the deduction law to require that deductions made be timely paid over to the lawful recipients. There was previously no provision that deductions, even if they were lawfully made, be paid over in any particular time period, and we were actually seeing deductions that we couldn't enforce because they were lawfully deducted from the employee's pay. They just hadn't been paid over to where they were supposed to go. So House Bill 2674 specifically addressed that issue by requiring employers to timely pay deductions that had been made. And with House Bill 2674 came a penalty provision that indicated that if an employer violated that particular provision of the deduction statute, there could be a civil penalty assessed. It didn't address all the other types of unlawful deductions addressed in 652610, so currently there is no civil penalty authority for any of those types of deductions, only the timely payment of the deduction to the appropriate recipient. So Senate Bill 159 would both make pay-by-signature violations a violation of wage and hour law and expand the Bureau of Civil Penalty Authority to include civil penalty authority for all types of unlawful deductions. And the agency urges your support of this bill.
Okay, questions for Ms. Hammond. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. When I discussed this bill with the proponent, the question of how other industries, you know, approach compliance with wage and hour laws and whether there are some alternatives. And I guess what I tried to do is compare it to industries where you have piecework, where the real impact of the wage and hour legislation is to make sure that minimum wage standards are followed. But in sort of entering into this new area of regulation, we are expanding the BOLI's authority, if we pass this bill, to enter into a different area, and we're creating a new set of violations because currently the election laws are the ones that cover whether or not you can do by signature compensation. It's banned. You know, the question I have is, was there any discussion of any other approach to simply make sure that people who get these signatures are being paid at the minimum wage?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I think the wage and hour laws, as I indicated, not only protect the minimum wage and overtime regulations of workers, but again, we do have a variety of other working condition protections. And I guess I would just say that I could see where enforcing the prohibition on pay by signature would be a further protection of workers under wage and hour law that would just add to the current protections.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, follow up.
Well, we agree that it's currently illegal to pay by signature. So what is the impetus for creating an additional authority within an additional agency?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I think the idea is just that it would be more efficient for one agency to be enforcing that provision if we were already enforcing other provisions of wage and hour law, rather than require the Bureau to take an action for some violations and refer the pay-by-signature violation to the Secretary of State for a separate action. It just seems more efficient all the way around to have one agency dealing with those violations.
Madam Chairman.
Follow up.
But does this legislation propose removing the authority from the Elections Division?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, no. I think it just would allow the Wage and Hour Division to also pursue that if the Bureau was already taking an enforcement action, and maybe the Secretary of State's office wouldn't otherwise have to take an enforcement action.
Madam Chair, you know, I think what we're doing is duplicating. We have one agency that's responsible for the election law administration and compliance, and adding another agency, which has traditionally referred all these complaints to the Secretary of State's office, seems to me to be a duplication. Is there any testimony by the Secretary of State's office that they're now incapable of doing the enforcement on the ban?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I'm not aware of that, no.
Okay. And what I see the bill doing is adding another layer of civil penalties. And so the question I've got is, it rather seems like piling on to me, because you would be subjecting people to jeopardy and not only the violation of the election law, but now the civil penalties, which are greater under the Bureau of Labor and Industries labor laws. So is it conceivable that people could have a complaint filed and be disciplined by the Secretary of State, only to find that they're also being prosecuted by the Bureau of Labor and Industries for the same violations?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I suppose that's possible. I don't think that's the intent, and I suppose we could consider amending the bill to limit, you know, that happening, so that if one agency were to take action for that violation, the other agency would not.
Madam Chairman, the concern I have is that in all the election laws, I think that the Secretary of State really feels an obligation to be an honest broker between what clearly can be competitive, if not outright combative, forces, you know, that surround these issues. And the thing I think we need to remind ourselves is that the legislature didn't create the initiative process. That was the citizens created creating the initiative process and reserving it for themselves. And so to enter into this not with one set of issues that, you know, may rightly, in my opinion, be housed within the Elections Division, because that's sort of the arena that we find ourselves in with these issues, but now to give it a whole different treatment under labor law violations seems to me to be more or less an overkill. It's duplication of penalties, duplication of investigations. I have no evidence that the Secretary of State's office is incapable of conducting investigations or conducting disciplinary actions if they find violations. So to add, you know, another whole bureaucracy on top of this seems to me to be piling on. And frankly, I don't know that the Bureau of Labor and Industries has any business in the elections law enforcement. And I think that's why when the prohibition against paying by the signature was enshrined, you know, in Oregon's law and constitution, that the specific remedies were also housed in the Secretary of State's office. So I guess I don't know. Maybe I should ask, where does this come from? Who's asking for the expansion of this bureaucratic authority?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, this is a Bureau of Labor and Industries bill.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Yes, Senator Burdick.
Thank you. I actually share kind of the concern, the sort of the double jeopardy, for lack of a better word. Did you talk at all to the Secretary of State's office about maybe moving the authority on wage and hour, or rather than having two potential enforcement arms?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, we definitely talked to the Secretary of State's office about this proposal. There really wasn't any discussion about both agencies assessing penalties for the same violation. And again, I don't think that was the intent. I don't think we have any expectation that we are going to assess additional penalties to any penalties that the Secretary of State might also assess for the same violation.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Burdick.
I noticed that the Secretary of State's office is sitting in the room but has not signed up.
That would show excellent diplomatic skills, ma'am.
It would seem to me that this is something that might need a little bit more interagency work.
And I think, Senator Burdick, you weren't quite here yet when the Secretary of State did testify earlier on the fact that they have legislation that they chose to introduce on the House side that doesn't really deal with exactly the subject matter of this bill, but does change some of their authority.
Actually, I did hear that, and I was very encouraged. Well, I'm very encouraged with the steps they've taken so far, and very encouraged about some of the proposals I see coming forward from the Secretary of State.
Okay, thank you, Senator Burdick. Any more questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And I'll call Tim Trickey. Please come forward.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. Esteemed Senators, thank you for letting me join you today. I'm here to testify.
If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Oh, my apologies. My name is Tim Trickey. I'm here as a private citizen today, but for sake of disclosure, I actually work for one of your colleagues, Senator George, here in the building. I decided to come down here and testify. This is not something I typically do, but Senate Bill 159 has one small provision that I think has some problematic implications here. Specifically in Section 2, the second-to-last sentence or phraseology there basically says that payment is not based either directly or indirectly on the number of signatures obtained. Now, for sake of background, from 2005 to 2008, I ran a signature-gathering business here in the state of Oregon. At that time, we, over the course of 4 years, we employed over 150 people. We gathered over 2.5 million signatures in Oregon and Washington, and I know this process from the employer side of hiring and working with paid petitioners in the field. I know this process incredibly well. In fact, I had a whole series of testimony prepared here. I'm going to go ahead and just for sake of time today and considering that we're probably going to go back to the drawing board on this bill, the implication of the indirect payment per signatures poses a serious problem for somebody who is seeking to legally follow the constraints of Measure 26, which is the voter-passed initiative, putting in the Constitution a ban on payment per signature. The phrase indirectly leaves open a gaping hole for enforcement. And the indirectly refers to the fact that everybody in this room accepts on face value that I may not simply approach an individual, Joe Smith, and offer them $1 per signature for gathering signatures on an initiative petition. But to say that I cannot take into consideration any element of productivity, any number of signatures gathered within an hourly time period, within a weekly time period, things of that nature, basically kind of runs counter to the accepted principles of economics that we use as a society to function. To say that I have, as an employer, if I read this indirectly clause or section correctly, this could leave open a tremendous loophole where I would be, as a former employer of petitioners who is seeking to follow the letter and intent of the law, could in essence be prosecuted for requiring any sort of minimum standard for a petitioner going out seeking to gather signatures. As a matter of practice, when I started the business in 2005, I sat down with individuals from the Secretary of State's office and the Attorney General's office, brought them my employment contract, sat down with them, went through what I had intended to do, how I intended to pay employees, and was basically granted tacit permission that this does comply with the accepted interpretation of Measure 26. This provision here, you should probably change this, so on and so forth. Over the subsequent course of employing petitioners, I had several cases which ended up in front of the Bureau of Labor and Industries for similar type of scrutiny. And in all cases, they maintained that it was acceptable to put a minimum standard of productivity for somebody working on an hourly basis. So, for example, when it comes to signature gathering, this is a very delicate situation because to say you're going to receive $10 an hour for gathering 10 signatures an hour, that's basically payment per signature. We all understand that, you know, in practical purposes, that's how it's interpreted by the employee. That's how it's interpreted when it looks on paper in terms of payroll. But to set a minimum standard, and in my case, the only accepted procedural elements that the Secretary of State would sign off on as in compliance with Measure 26 would be to run a roving scale. For example, we employed over 150 petitioners from all different types of backgrounds, different racial, ethnic backgrounds, different education levels, different ages, ranging from 18 years of age to 72 years of age, various physical and mental capabilities, or in some cases disabilities. These people, quite frankly, on face value, work at different paces. They have different abilities to produce the end product of going out and gathering signatures from Oregon citizens. And as such, I paid certain employees. The baseline pay for our company was $12 an hour. If somebody couldn't maintain the standards we had set for that, quite frankly, this is too important to the state to have people out there who don't know what they're doing. The top end of the pay range was dependent upon a number of factors, depending on how much money was available to us, the contractor in this case, how much time was available left to circulate, the urgency of things, that the weather, to be perfectly honest, has a bearing on how much we have to pay people to go out and gather signatures. I was able to pay on a range of pay based on established minimum standards for gathering signatures. Under this bill here, as it's written today, that one simple word opens up a gaping hole for enforcement of what is a payment per signature, what is not a payment per signature. And quite frankly, I cannot find the compelling state interest in going beyond the current existing interpretation of the law, other than to make it very, very difficult for those seeking to hire paid petitioners to put a various initiative on the ballot. I think it's raising the bar for them. Quite frankly, no other industry is told that they must hire, if this bill is passed and implemented, we would be unique in the sense that no other industry is told that they have to hire somebody on an hourly basis and establish basically no way to measure productivity. Because, let's face it, in an industry where we have a set goal, meaning a certain number of signatures, qualified Oregon voters that need to sign petitions in order to qualify an initiative, that is a finite number, and we have to base our budgeting based upon how many hours of labor, at what average rate of collection is it going to take to get this number of signatures to qualify an initiative. That's very different than simply paying per signature, which encourages the black market backroom dealings of trading signatures for cash, so on and so forth. I'm starting to rabbit trail here. Please forgive me, senators. I don't want to get off too much in the actual discussion of the initiative process as a whole. My point coming to you here today is I have no financial or any sort of incentive to come before you and testify in opposition to this bill, but I love the initiative process, and I love the fact that the average Oregon voters have had the ability to take legislative policy into their own hands, go out there, whether it be with volunteers, whether it be with paid petitioners, or with a combination, most likely a combination of both. They've been able to influence public policy directly from the citizen level. I see a progressively growing cost in completing initiatives. For example, in 1990, the average cost of doing a statutory initiative was around $50,000. 10 years later, in 2000, it was in the neighborhood of about $200,000. This last year, and I'm drawing these numbers simply for Morstar, so if anybody would like to go back and kind of check my math, they're happy to. Under current situations, as they arise today, with all of the reforms and regulations that have been imposed to protect from fraud and forgery, the cost of completing a citizen initiative, a statutory initiative, not a constitutional amendment, is in the neighborhood of $400,000. I believe that has put it out of the reach of average Oregonians. It's now in the hands of moneyed interests, people who have access to large amounts of capital, and quite frankly, any citizen group who is truly grassroots-oriented and is based in a real down-home attempt to influence public policy It's simply put out of reach. If you now tell employers that they have no ability to budget for the cost of their employees, if you have no ability to set minimum productivity standards, and that you may set yourself up for prosecution for simply trying to follow the intent of the law, I, as an employer, if I was currently still in the business, I would double my prices and hope and pray that I had enough capital on hand to complete the projects on time. If the current cost is $400,000 today and we had to double it to $800,000, there is only a select few very wealthy individuals, large corporations or unions that could afford to do this. And I think that's really a detriment to the health of the initiative system as a whole. I think anything we can do to prosecute forgery and stop fraud within the process is the end-all, be-all, the compelling state interest for regulating the initiative process. I have no comments as to the wage and hour considerations that were brought up from my colleague at Boley, but at the same time, I'm concerned that leaving this word indirectly in this bill opens up a separate set of concerns and a separate set of issues that may or may not have been considered by this committee at this point. So I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any questions.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And that completes our witness list on Senate Bill 159. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 159? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 159. And I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 267. And Erin, would you please tell us about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 267 requires Chief Petitioner of Initiative of Referendum to disclose system of bonuses, incentives, or payment or minimum expectations of signatures to be attained, prohibit system of bonuses, incentives, or payment with effect of paying person per signature, modifies liability of contractors or subcontractors of chief petitioners with knowledge of violation of law or rule related to circulation of initiative or referendum petition, provides confidential reporting of certain violations of election law, and declares emergency is effective upon passage. You do have, and we did receive written testimony from League of Women Voters. I know that they were signed up today to testify, but they had other obligations to go to this afternoon, and we're not here, but we do have their testimony before you.
Okay, members, and you should have that either on your computer, and I think there's also a printed copy of it in front of you from the League of Women Voters. And then we have one other witness signed up to testify, and that is Alana Gwinney. Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alana Gwinney. As I said, I work in the elections division, and I process accounts data. And the Secretary of State is in support of this bill, Senate Bill 267. I want to talk about a couple of the provisions and why they would be useful, especially in my position analyzing accounts data. Mr. Turkey brought up the issue of quotas, and that is an issue we're concerned about as well. He's correct that quotas can be used as a workaround for the paper signature prohibition. Quotas create the same patterns and consistency in payroll data that paper signature would. And so, for example, if, as I process accounts data, I put it all together and I look if there's a pattern in terms of whether circulators are gathering close to the same number of signatures in an hour, close to the same payment per signature, and that would raise a red flag for me that maybe there's a paper signature violation going on. The problem is that quotas create that exact same pattern. So by requiring that quotas be disclosed up front, we would be avoiding the retroactive excuse of quotas. So if someone says we require our employees to get 18 signatures an hour and their data shows that everyone's getting exactly 21 signatures an hour, there would still be a problem. We're trying to find a balance. We don't want to go too far in regulating initiative companies. We agree that we probably can't stop them from having performance thresholds at all. So I think this is a good compromise to require that they disclose them to us so that we can account for those patterns as we're processing their accounts data and looking for paper signature violations. Senate Bill 267 also allows for confidential complaints to the Secretary of State. This is for largely the same reasons I mentioned in House Bill 2258. We want to harness the knowledge of people out there in the streets gathering signatures and those companies, because they're in the best position to know what's really happening. They could be anywhere in the state at any given time. We can't be in all those places, and they know how they're getting paid. They know who they work for. They know if they're in the best position to know if anything illegal is going on. And so by allowing them to complain to us confidentially, it would address that issue of fear of reprisal in the small signature gathering community in Oregon, as I mentioned. Finally, the bill would allow for subcontractor liability where they know that a violation of paper signature has occurred. This closes a loophole because there had already been contractor liability, but the reality is that a number of contractors sometimes hire subcontractors, and the subcontractor is usually the one who's actually employing the signature gatherers, and so they're in the best position to know if anything illegal is going on, and we want to hold them accountable if they know that and don't disclose that to our office. So as I said, I think Senate Bill 267 would provide some helpful tools for our office and make it easier to process accounts data and know when paper signature is being violated. I'm happy to answer any questions.
So, and I'm not sure if this is a question better asked to the previous witness on the previous bill, but in terms of the testimony we heard about inability to enforce productivity standards, I would assume that it's not a violation of the law to let an employee go for any reason at all, including that they're just not producing work. I mean, either they're not working up to expectation. I mean, do you now take action against signature gathering companies for terminating employees?
Madam Chair, no. I agree with you that signature gathering companies should be able to fire people for whatever reason they deem necessary. Under our administrative rules, we expressly allow quotas, I think for the reasons Mr. Turkey was speaking about earlier. We can't go too far in regulating how they do that, but you know, we're open to, I think, ideas on the best way to strike the balance on the quota issue, because it really does make it difficult to enforce paper signature when quotas kind of can become paper signature by another name.
And the provisions of the bill that require upfront provision of an employment contract, I'm reading this bill that it has to be disclosed in advance of going out into the field with signature paid signature gatherers, that the contract would have to be, filed with the Secretary of State under this bill. Is that a change from current law? Do they have to provide copies of those contracts right now at all?
Currently, the way that the account statute works under our administrative rules is that our office will make an accounts demand of everyone who's paying for signatures in Oregon, everyone who's circulating and paying signature gatherers, and we can make that demand at any time. I think in the past it's usually been towards the end so that, you know, when they're gathering the most signatures and doing the most payments, and then we can kind of get the retroactive data. But we haven't been asking for it up front. We currently have a rule that's been noticed that we have not yet adopted that would require monthly accounts turn in, so that we would just be getting monthly updates whenever they turn in their signatures for the monthly turn in. They would also be turning in their accounts data. But there's no provision currently that they would give it to us before they started circulating.
So this bill would give you that authority, clearly.
Okay. Sure, yes.
Any other questions for Ms.
Just one, Madam Chair.
Is your name Gwynny or Guinea?
Guinea. They say it all kinds of ways in Ireland.
I'm sure.
Chair.
Guinea. Ms. Guinea.
I get
yes,
called
Senator.
That sometimes, Madam Chair.
Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Was there, is there an opportunity to sort of have a convocation of signature gatherers and, you know, sort of a forum on what would be the middle ground to give the agency the authority and the transparency that it needs to assure compliance, and yet not overly burden or bureaucratize or make less accessible the constitutionally guaranteed right for citizens to engage in direct democracy?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I think we take every opportunity we can to harness the knowledge of the signature gathering companies and the signature gatherers themselves when we have contact with those people. I think we would welcome any input they give us, and we do work with them to kind of iron out these policy issues, because there, as I said, there are only a few companies that do this in Oregon, and so we definitely speak to companies, you know, on both sides of the aisle and look for their input on the best way to strike a balance.
So, Madam Chair, just I guess what I'm asking is, has that happened relative to this piece of legislation?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, not to my knowledge, but I do think people above my pay grade have probably been having those conversations with the signature gathering companies. In terms of the actual signature gatherers who are out there, it's kind of a challenge. Some of them tend to be somewhat mobile. They go from state to state to gather signatures, but I think we could definitely look at finding a way to harness their knowledge and look for their input on this issue.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I had looked at the agenda and expected that there would be, you know, people here that would offer observations, as Mr. Trickey did, from that world, and I would hope that we would have an opportunity to sort of put them on notice that, I mean, there is certainly a list in the Secretary of State's office of people who've engaged in signature gathering. And I just wondered if there wasn't an outreach to those folks to say, hey, this is a piece of legislation that's in play in this legislative session, so weigh in. I think that would be, you know, make me more comfortable that at least they had their inning.
Yeah, I think we could do that. And it is the case that, as Ms. Skinny said, many of those companies are headquartered elsewhere. So we could try to find contact information for them. I think there are maybe a few that are headquartered in Oregon, too.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. And is there anyone else who'd like to comment on Senate Bill 267? Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 267. Members, we will be meeting next week for executive appointments. I think you have a list in front of you, which has been now circulated to the full Senate of several individuals who will be
surprise
appearing, some in person, some by telephone, correct?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding that only two people will be appearing by phone this time, so we'll have a lot of personal appearances.
Great. So please try to be on time next week and ready to hear from all these wonderful Oregonians who are interested in serving.
You, Madam Chair, will there be any incentive pay for us to show up on time for that?
The incentive pay is the goodwill of the citizens of Oregon, I believe.
That priceless.
Priceless.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. And with nothing to come before us, we're adjourned.